Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Thursday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I am now joined by RBR Wrestling, my favorite pro wrestling podcast, longtime host, the original host, William R. Washington. William, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I am good. Good afternoon, Chase.
It's been a little bit. It's been a few months since we talked.
What, I was last on in July?
Oh, man. A different time.
You'd think so, but honestly, it all blends together. Was it really?
Not all that's different. I have to start off this podcast with you, Will, because you have maybe the most insane wrestling mind I've encountered in my life, you were talking about it on RBR, I think, last week, of just you keep watching WWE because you're like, I have to use all this information that I just have.
Because I don't want to have gaps. What I said was, I'm afraid of having gaps in my wrestling knowledge, and right. That's really the only reason I keep watching.
I'm right there with you with sports. It's like you're kind of like tied in this forever, where I don't want to have that gap, and I think that's why I take notes on everything, because I can just go back and look at it. I don't like just like you with sports and different things, where I'm just like, I don't like not knowing certain things in the back of my mind. I'm right there with you. So I'm gonna ask you a question about we're gonna do an obscure wrestling fact to get shake the rust off, Will.
Oh, okay. Wasn't prepared for this, but that's the point, right?
Yeah, that is a free-flowing conversation, sir.
Okay.
All I'm gonna say is this particular wrestler, and you're just gonna give me a random fact that most people would not associate with this professional wrestler. Are you ready?
Oh, sure.
All right. The obscure wrestling fact that comes to your mind when I say the name Maven, what first comes to your mind?
Oh, that he's actually related to Booker T.
Is that true?
Uh-huh. I actually just had this thought the other day, because for whatever reason, my daughter was asking me about Tough Enough. Mm-hmm. And I think they're like, I know there's some kind of cousin, but I can't remember what it was. But I know, because they have the same last name, and like people were like, wasn't it weird that you guys have the same last name, Booker Huffman and Maven Huffman? And I think it was like, yeah, we're actually like related on some side. I don't remember what it was, but I know that they actually do have some relation.
Well, it's gotta be the dad side.
Yeah,
that's wild. I did. Okay, this is great. What a game. I'm glad I did this. I learned this today. I did not know this was a thing. Well, that's awesome. I have a lot of questions that I want to throw at you today for the podcast, because this has been a pretty solid week of wrestling. I don't know if you knew this or not, but pro wrestling likes branding things, and I don't think there was enough New Year's specials this week. What do you think?
I know, right? Between what, New Year's Dash, New Year's Smash, New Year's Evil, and then Raw didn't even bother. Raw was just like, hey, Legends Night.
Well, they just don't care. Like, Raw is just like, whatever. No one's getting excited for Raw. Like, we can put it whatever brand we want to spend on it, but I don't even want to talk about Raw outside of, like, McIntyre, Goldberg. I want to pick your brain about, but, like, the Hogan stuff, just awful. Everything about it, just, Raw just bums me out. Like, I want to avoid talking about Raw as much as humanly possible.
That's fine by me. I barely watched it this week. And by barely, I mean didn't. I just caught the highlights on social media later, but you know, it was my New Year's resolution to try and be... I guess to not care as much about having gaps in my wrestling knowledge. So I was like, I'm going to start by skipping Raw. And
I don't think this is going to happen well. You're too programmed. How old are you?
33.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I know.
You're fighting years and years and years of hardwiring. I don't know if
basketball season being back, it helps because it was like, you know, I can at least throw on some games right now and
watch the Nuggets go 2-6.
What are they now? 3-4?
Yeah, 3-4. I think they beat 2-5. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, they just beat Minnesota in back-to-backs, and then they have Dallas tonight, which I'm hoping they can go 4-4, at which point then we don't have to talk about them being at the bottom any longer.
Well, that's probably true. And both our teams are 500 teams at the moment. So that's fine, but we're going the opposite way. The Hawks started off hot, and now they're really struggling down the last couple of days. Phoenix versus Kenny Omega.
Hey, my kind of wrestling.
Is it already at the top of your match of the year?
Of course, yeah. And the thing is, this is coming from somebody who, for the first year ever, I watched Wrestle Kingdom live. So it would be very easy for me to pick a couple of matches from Wrestle Kingdom. Mm-hmm. But, you know, honestly, Rey Fénix versus Kenny Omega, to me, was the kind of match that I like. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it's the kind of match I like, but the kind of match that I want to see in a main event for a title, in that you took somebody like a Rey Fénix who, you know, Lucha... guys, you know, talking about, you know, when you think of Lucha guys, the first one that comes to mind is Rey Mysterio. And part of what made Rey Mysterio such a star was his ability to work with non-Lucha guys. And so it was like watching the Styles clash made Rey Mysterio matches. Like the big one that comes to mind with people is Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle from SummerSlam 02. There really hasn't been an act since Rey Mysterio that's been able to do that until I feel like Rey Fénix. Like, I feel like Kalisto, like, had the opportunity, but they were just never willing to go all the way with him. But I feel like Rey Fénix...
Give it a couple more years. I think we're close.
But I feel like Rey Fénix is that guy. And he's in his 20s, so this isn't a guy who's, like, late into his career. Mm-hmm. Rey Fénix has plenty of time left to continue to pull this kind of stuff off. But I feel like... he is that guy who is a young Lucha wrestler who has the ability to get in there with a non-Lucha guy and just tear it down. And I feel like this wasn't his first go-around with Kenny Omega. They had, as a matter of fact, Kenny Omega having the AAA championship came via match with Rey Fénix. And it was also excellent. But this here was just solid across the board. And it's one of those matches where, like, you know, Kenny's not going to lose the belt. But it was more about seeing what Rey Fénix is going to do next, because Rey Fénix is so not human with the stuff he pulls off. I saw a tweet that said that it had me cracking up. It was like, thinking about what a normal human would do in a wrestling ring is probably what Snoop Dogg did in that splash. And the complete opposite of that is what Rey Fénix pulled off. And which means he can't be human.
there were moments in the, like, I don't even know what to call this sequence, where just the, it looked like an inverted Canadian destroyer, where, like, or he comes off the top rope and Kenny flies on his back. Like, those kind of moves just scare the shit out of me in real time.
Yeah.
Just, it's so quick, and both of them are just so fast, and the timing was perfect in this match, but that was what stood out to me, that spot. And I mean, obviously Kenny was not going to lose this match, but this was one of those bangers where you're just like, let's just let two amazing professional wrestlers get time and just kill each other.
Yes, I agree. And I had so much fun watching it.
I think the post-match angle was even better.
Yeah. So the post-match angle was interesting because, you know, the Bullet Club is one of those things that has been tried and referenced everywhere in the United States. And so,
well, I've heard of the club. Give me more info on this Bullet Club.
Of course, the Bullet Club being the biggest faction in New Japan's history, and at one point was led by Prince Devitt, now Finn Balor, was later led by AJ Styles. And I said that to get to the point where AJ Styles was kicked out of the Bullet Club in 2016 by his protege and new leader of the Bullet Club, Kenny Omega. There was a moment where it was AJ's last match in New Japan. I believe it was at New Year's Dash 2016. Kenny had hit a one-winged angel on AJ Styles, and then the Bucks kind of questioned, like, what are you doing? And then they super kick AJ Styles. And then the Good Brothers come out, and they kind of shove around, and Kenny raises up the Too Sweet, and the Bucks raise it up, and then the Good Brothers Too Sweet them, and they all stomp AJ Styles and kick him out of the ring. So that was really like the last time we saw this five of the Bullet Club together, was that night, because shortly after that, Gallows and Anderson actually then left New Japan and followed AJ Styles to WWE. So that was like the last time we've seen this five, was 5 years ago. And of course, the Bullet Club later split into two factions, with the lower members of the Bullet Club and the elite members of the Bullet Club, which later just called themselves the Elite, and then left the Bullet Club as the Elite, and then started a wrestling company called All Elite Wrestling. It's funny, the entire existence of AEW is really based around the Bullet Club.
Yeah.
And so thinking about that, what was kind of cool here is, of course, you know, Kenny Omega being a heel now and aligned with Impact Wrestling's Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson. And the Good Brothers showed up after the match to attack John Moxley, who, you know, what was funny was Moxley comes out with that barbed wire bat, and, you know, he's been kind of taunting with the barbed wire bat for a while. I think he's used it a couple of times in AEW, but this is the first time I probably noticed that that's real barbed wire on that bat. I was like, you know, maybe they work it every once in a while, because, like, when he actually hit somebody with it. But when it actually, like, put holes in Kenny's arm, I realized, oh, that's like a real barbed wire bat. Why would you work that? And then, like, when Kenny was using it on Moxley and it was, like, sticking to his shirt.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was one of those things that was getting me. But, yeah, the ending was kind of cool, because I feel like there's a lot of story to tell there where, you know, the Good Brothers made their way out, and all the AEW guys who were at ringside jumped the barricade and were basically trying to protect the sacred ground that is Daly's place from these invaders. And then out runs the Young Bucks, who look a little bit confused, but then they super kicked, or at least Matt Jackson did, because apparently Nick has an injury to his leg, and so he just motioned to do it. But they had super kicked Griff Garrison and Brian Pillman Jr. Yeah. And but that came off, it didn't come off like a this was a setup kind of thing. It came off like a, you know, we're here for our friend, because you know, when you're Bullet Club, you're Bullet Club for life. And it's like, we're here for these guys because we're lifetime, you know, we were with this group from the beginning. And you know, if your guys are doing some kind of reunion, we're with you. But, like, they seemed reluctant. And so I like that, because I like that, you know, the immediate moment is, kind of the opposite of what they did 5 years ago, where it was Kenny and the Bucks who raised the two sweet, and then Gallows and Anderson joined in on it to, and that was like a, oh my God, they just betrayed their best friend AJ Styles. And this was kind of the opposite, where it was Kenny and the Good Brothers raising the two sweet, and the Bucks were like, okay, and they raised it too and joined with them. But I have a feeling there's more to come. But it was a cool moment. It was a really cool moment.
It was one of my favorite endings of a pro wrestling show in a while.
Did you see the
talk about Kingston? And
did you see the post show stuff?
I have not.
They had a moment where Callis and Kenny, and they uploaded it to Twitter, are headed to their car like they did on the episode at Winner's Coming.
They sold the title, yeah.
Yeah. And they're stopped by Alex Marvez, and they talked about, and this is one of those like little subtle things that I kind of like that AEW does, where they said that next week the Elite will be in action, but they didn't show the three wrestlers of the Elite. They just showed the Elite logo. And Kenny and Kenny and Don Callis are talking about it, and Don Callis says, yeah, next week Kenny's going to team with his best friends, the World Tag Team Champions. And you're going to want to see this. And then they get in the car. And I thought about that, and I thought, he didn't say which World Tag Team Champions. And I feel like that was one of those little details where like they made sure that the Good Brothers were seen with their belts when they came out, so that we know they are a set of tag team champions. And so when you say like Kenny teaming up with his best friends, the tag team champions, your initial thought is supposed to be, oh, he's teaming up with the Bucks, like he usually does. But then like I could see next week the Bucks thinking that, you know, getting prepared for the match, thinking it's them, and then saying, no, I meant the Good Brothers, and that we start to get the dissension between the two.
I'm excited for it. I think it's gonna be fun. I think this is an interesting development. This was another one of those nights where it's just like, man, I wish this was a full building. Like, I wish this was a fully packed show, because this kind of angle to close AEW would have been wild. And I think I was there for AJ Styles going away Bullet Club Ring of Honor appearance in Atlanta.
Oh.
So it kind of reminded me of that, where they all two sweet in the middle of the ring and everything. And to wrap up the show before AJ dipped to the Royal Rumble, the right person to defeat Hikaru Shida is who? Because it is not Azkaban who fell last night, and that is what I will call
Abaddon, you mean?
No, I call her Azkaban. I've written in my notes multiple times Azkaban. I can't, like, as a Harry Potter stan,
yeah,
I just can't. Yeah, I hear Abaddon, and I think Azkaban, and I just write in my notes Azkaban. And I think it's actually a cooler name. So as the pro wrestling czar, Will, I don't know if you got the memo that I have
right.
Superseded Tony Khan on this front. Shout out to Tony Khan. But yeah, it was a good match, and I like Abaddon a lot, in all seriousness. But I don't know who the right person to defeat.
Absolutely know who it is, and who? I feel like that's why they've been holding off. It's Britt Baker. There's no way it's anybody but Britt. Like, the fact that she turned heel a year ago at this point, it was on the first show of 2020, where she came after Riho for her lack of appearances. And she spent a year kind of developing the character and really coming into her own. She's also bulked up a lot, and she's in like fantastic shape these days. When she came back from injury, and like, I don't know, I called her Beef Baker on Twitter, because like her arms she definitely just spent that time off just like working out. And she's in great physical shape. I feel like she has really come into her own in the ring. And I think, as kind of the most dynamic character in the women's division, I'm glad that they didn't do that thing that that WWE does, where as soon as somebody is like starting to develop a character, they're like, all right, put the belt on them. I like that they gave it a year, and if we can hold off till even the next pay-per-view, Revolution, which is in a month and a half, I think it would just be a great crowning moment for Britt Baker to have really come into her own as a character. Like, thinking about the fact that it's almost been a year since that promo in Cleveland where she said, "Cleveland, you finally have a baker you can believe in," which was such a great line. And just having brought all that back together, I feel like she's the right one. But I wouldn't do it till the next pay-per-view. I'd maybe give Sheeta a few more retentions.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know who the right answer is there, but I would not be opposed to, I guess, Britt Baker, but I'm also just not the biggest Britt Baker in-ring fan. So, I don't know. I like her character a lot.
I think that's what the AEW women's title needs right now. I feel like...
is a character.
Yeah, it needs a character, because I think part of the reason a lot of people are down on it is because one of the things that helped establish the AEW world title, the men's world title, was Chris Jericho. In that Chris Jericho is such a presence in a character that I feel like had they just put it on a babyface, even if it's a good babyface, that's kind of an uphill battle you have to fight, because at that point, there's not a whole lot of want and huge desire to see that title change hands. Whereas, like, you put it on Chris Jericho, immediately, you know, his first challenger was Cody, and that gave the title a big presence, because, like, there's a lot of people who believe that Cody should have been the guy to beat Jericho, and then he didn't, then it was Moxley.
Well, to be fair to Chris Jericho, he's not ever been a person who's a fan of a peaceful transition of power.
That's good. I like that. But yeah, like, that's... but I feel like that helped give the title that sense of prestige, where, like, even Cody knew that, because when Cody won the TNT title, he worked heel in a lot of his matches. You know, they had put him against a lot of babyfaces. Like, he worked the babyface character, but then once he got in the ring, he worked from that angle of you wanting to see the title change hands. And I feel like that was also effective, but I feel like that hasn't really existed for the women's title, because, like, Rio came in, she won the title right off the bat, and she was just kind of white meat babyface. And then it was put on Nyla Rose, who I think in that show you were at in Atlanta, like, cut a really solid promo.
Yeah.
On
best wrestling show I've ever been to.
Yeah, that's I gave that my show of the year. But she cut that promo about where she said, "Nobody is a beast like me." Like, I love that promo. And then the pandemic happened, and she got stuck in Washington, D.C. for 2 months, and she lost 2 months of basically character building, of, like, making you want to see her lose the title. And they put the belt on Sheeta because, like, it was really the right time for Sheeta anyway, because she had just racked up so many wins. Like, they had kind of put her on that streak. She still hasn't been beaten in a one-on-one match. Like, it was one of those things where she had won so much that it's like, how do you keep her strong but not put the belt on her when you have this, like, ranking system where she would have to become the number one contender? And so they put the belt on her. And she's been strong since, but there still has not been that character in the women's division that can make you want to see the title change. And I feel like that's going to be Britt Baker. And I feel like she'll be the one to, even if she eventually loses the belt back to Sheeta, or they find, I don't know, somebody else, like they sign as Zelina Vega or something. I feel like she will be the one to give the belt the presence it needs.
That's fair. Do you like the new TNT title? I think it's even better. They keep getting a little bit better each.
Yeah,
each
I like the black strap. I like the TNT title all around. Like, I get why people didn't like it to begin with, but I knew what the problem was, because, like, I get custom belts made all the time. I'm looking at three of them on my shelf. And so, like, I saw it immediately when they handed Cody the belt, and I was like, oh, that doesn't have a coating on it. That just looks like zinc plates. And I was like, that looks like it's just zinc, and then they painted the TNT logo and the championship banner, but that does not look like a finished belt. And sure enough, and then they said it wasn't. And there was a lot of people who were like, oh, yeah, the AEW just making excuses for their bad belt. And I'm like, no, I know what, like, an unfinished belt looks like. That does not look like a finished belt. I've seen this. And when they brought it in the finished version, like, I like it. I know there's people who don't like the empty space. I follow the guy who made the belt on Facebook, and I got his reasoning for the empty space behind the TNT logo, which is that it's the TNT logo. Like, legally, that's the TNT logo. And he was like, if I modify that in any way, which the TNT logo is literally a circle, an empty circle with the letters TNT in it. And he's like, and I was not allowed to modify the TNT logo in any way. So that's why there's empty space. He was like, tell TNT to get a new logo. And I could change that. But I think it works, it, like, recognizing what the TNT logo is. And then, yeah, they changed the strap to black, which was funny because I played around with that in Photoshop when they first brought in the belt. Because I was like, you know, I wonder how that would look on a black strap. And I'm like, oh, that kind of looks sweet. I wonder if they'd ever do it. And I'm like, they probably won't, though. And so when Darby actually came out with it, I got excited. I'm like, they did the thing with the black strap.
There you go. But that sounds more like, to me, and I'm not speaking for all RBR wrestling fans, but for me, that sounds like some William AEW Washington spin.
Yep. Yeah, it's my new middle name. I don't know. Because, like, last week they announced that they were giving the old belt to Brody Jr. And they said that next week, or they said they were going to give Darby a new belt. And I even questioned on RBR. I'm like, how would they have had time to make a new belt? And so I should have known it was going to be the same belt with just, like, a modified strap. And that's cool. It looks fine. I thought it would have been maybe too weird to debut an entirely new design. Like, I don't know where the time would have existed for that because it's not like Brody's been gone more than 2 weeks, and it takes way longer than that to develop a new belt.
Yeah. Quickly on some non-AEW subject matter,
all right,
that I want to get your perspective on, Will. You and I, we Facebook message about Damian Priest a lot. You're very invested in his character. You're very invested in where NXT has gone with him. You love his voice. I'm also right there with you. Love his voice on NXT. He's got one of the coolest voices in professional wrestling. I think that's the best thing he has going for him. Also, he's tall, which Vince loves. He might be moving to SmackDown. Rhea Ripley looks to be written off from NXT as well. She'll be making the jump to Raw or SmackDown. Are you at all excited about seeing either of them on the main shows?
I think the smart thing to do if Rhea Ripley's off NXT is to just hold off on her to the Royal Rumble. And, like, don't debut her on Raw or SmackDown, but have her be a, like, surprise entrant Royal Rumble and win it. And then, all of a sudden, she's main roster. I am excited for her because I feel like Raw's women's division is kind of non-existent. My buddy Joe Hulbert on Twitter made the joke that Raw quietly retired the women's title because, like, it wasn't even defended at the last pay-per-view. And I don't think it was defended at the pay-per-view before that because it was Survivor Series. So it's really been quite some time since...
Well, Charlotte has been around. The rule is, if Charlotte's not around, the Raw women's title doesn't exist.
Right, and the thing is, like, Charlotte's back now, and so the focus is on the tag titles, but one half of the tag champions is the Raw women's champion. So you just haven't done anything with the Raw women's title at all.
Well, they've been busy. Hogan had to appear.
I mean, I can see them... my gut feeling tells me that they'll do the reversal of last year where Charlotte wins the title off of Asuka and then Rhea wins the Rumble and challenges Charlotte. And so we get the rematch from last year, except this time Charlotte's on the defense and then that allows Rhea to get the victory. I don't know. As far as Damian Priest is concerned, I don't know. You know, I saw the story that he was going to be inserted into the Roman Reigns Kevin Owens storyline. Okay, I don't know how that works or how that fits. We'll
easily.
See.
Oh, I don't know where.
Yeah,
it goes.
I thought you maybe had some actual reasoning.
No. Damian Priest is fine. I could see him actually. He's got a lot of Baron Corbin on the main roster vibes, where he'll just work a bunch of matches. He'll be in world title feuds. He'll just be around and never actually get the belt, never actually be treated as the top guy, but just like, hey, we need someone for a triple threat match to work with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. And that's
I could very much see that. Yeah, I could see that. And but I'd like to be pleasantly surprised because there have been those acts. I've always said that there's been certain acts that, like, didn't work in NXT and then ended up having more success on the main roster. Like, Elias is one of those acts who just had way more success on the main roster than he ever did in NXT. But then on the other hand, you have somebody like a Finn.
Hold on. I would like to see a few more weeks of him and Jackson Riker before I really, really am comfortable saying that he's not in a good place at the moment.
I don't know. But as far as, you know, your Finn Balor's or guys like that, like they get called up and then, or like Keith Lee is another one where, so far I'm not like super impressed with the call up. Yeah, he's had some good matches, but otherwise, like, what is the character? Where does he stand? I don't know. We'll see what they end up doing. I feel like Rhea's a really tough one to get wrong, but also, you know, they got Oscar mostly wrong. It's very possible to screw up kind of a hot act, and we'll see what they end up doing with it.
Yeah, that is fair. Last thing, we'll wrap up here. Goldberg, I know you're excited to talk about this with Maxwell tonight on RBR, but Goldberg versus Drew McIntyre is happening. Are you at all interested in this match and this feud?
Why? And I ask that question from multiple perspectives. Like, what are we doing here? Goldberg is, I guess, a babyface, though, like, his promo from this week, which I guess he was supposed to, like, have ad-libbed some stuff because Drew didn't get to cut his promo because of time crunch, and so Goldberg referenced the promo that didn't happen. And so Goldberg kind of comes off like a heel, but is he? And he's also, like, a heel that can only work 2 to 3 minute matches, and he only does two moves in them. So, but part of like Drew McIntyre's big appeal is that he is kind of this like ass kicker who goes out there and has like these long ass kicking matches. And I don't necessarily know what we're supposed to get out of this pairing, other than more people in the Royal Rumble. It's like, hey, this is some whoever Drew was going to face now gets to be in the Royal Rumble, so I guess that's cool. But other than that,
is there going to be a spot where he tries and spears Drew and Drew goes for the Claymore and they knock each other out?
I guess. Look, I don't know what this is supposed to be. The other thing, too, is like, what is the appeal of Goldberg anymore? In that it's not like, I know people always talked about how Goldberg's first WWE run was kind of botched. And talk about the things they got wrong with it. And they're like, oh, they made Goldberg look like a loser in that run. But like Goldberg in that run lost two matches. Whereas in this run, I believe he's lost to Lesnar. He lost to Undertaker. He's lost to Strowman. Is that it? I don't know.
I think that's it. That sounds about
I think
right.
That's it. But either way, I feel like the
he's
mystique...
lost fans that he's lost fans that would prefer he not kiss his son in the mouth.
Yeah, I feel like the idea of the unbeatable Goldberg is already done. He's lost to a good number of guys.
Because he's old.
Yeah, he is.
Which is fine. Yeah, it's the same thing they did with Taker. It just like the matches just started adding up. And you're like, man, he's lost a lot at this point. Like it's just on the way out. He loses a bunch of matches. Like the closest now is probably like Walter, I guess.
Yeah,
the modern day Goldberg, I guess, is kind of Waltery. I don't know, but I don't watch NXT UK, so I'm not familiar. Not familiar, and I will not watch NXT UK outside of the pay-per-views. All right, man. Well, this has been great. You have a lot of wrestling to talk about tonight, so I will keep you any longer, my friend. But I appreciate you making the time. What can we check out from you guys this week? Because RBR usually a Wednesday night show, but it is being taped tonight. Something in the country was going on yesterday.
And it was just like I no one could focus on wrestling.
Yeah, the headspace was just not there.
Yeah, so we're gonna do the show tonight at 8 p.m Eastern, 5 p.m Pacific. We are at mixler.com/fanoff. We're going to be talking about a little bit of Wrestle Kingdom, Dynamite from last night. I'm sure Eric and Paul are going to talk about NXT, and yeah, we'll discuss some of the wrestling news of the week, including the news that Tony Khan is buying theme songs. And I'm just kind of excited about that because I've wanted wrestling companies to spend money on theme songs again for a long time.
And it might, you know, push pushed out of you to get back on the let's not make crappy theme songs for everybody.
Yeah. Spend some money on Roland for Undertaker. Like, obviously that worked. You know,
well, hold on. Do you think Edge's worked? I mean, who's to say? Who's to say Metallicus did well for him? Who's to say? It's a little
who's
early.
To say?
Yep. Whom's amongst us have not made that same mistake? Will, thank you as always for the time, good sir. I appreciate it. Stay safe out there, and happy new year. And I hope 2021 is a great year for you, your family, and RBR Wrestling.
Thank you, Chase. Thank you for having me.
All right, we're back on the full ride on the Chase Thomas podcast. I am the aforementioned Chase Thomas up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, where, you know, people are having a normal one in Knoxville on the latest Jeremy Pruitt news in the Tennessee program, but we'll save that for a bit. Down there in Tequila, Georgia, as he always is, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, sir.
Good to talk to you again, man. Lots happening. I don't know. We talked last about this, but Matt Wyatt and I will be committed to doing some film study and working together and collaborating. Former Mississippi State quarterback Matt Wyatt, he's been on the podcast before. 2021 will be a big partnership there on the college football show we do here on the Chase Thomas podcast on the Full Ride. So I'm excited about that, covering JT Daniels this week. So we're going to be diving into some film there. How are you? How's the new year going?
Oh, I can't complain, man. You know, just other than college football coming to an end, it's a sad time for us diehard college football fans. But yeah, you know, 2020 is in the rearview mirror, and 2021 has already brought us some interesting things.
Already off to a great start. But we won't get into that in this podcast. The Heisman. I think we have to start here. Devontae Smith, no surprises there, leads the country in TD receptions, just been a multi-TD machine all year long. Post Jalen Waddle, they haven't missed a beat. Strong Marvin Harrison energy from Mr. Devontae Smith. First wide receiver to win the Heisman since Desmond Howard. Did they get it right?
Oh, absolutely they did. I was curious what you were saying with Marvin Harrison vibes.
Oh, that's just who he plays like. That's his NFL comp.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
He seems, yeah, I guess that seems like a good comparison. He seems as mild-mannered as
mild-mannered Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, but we obviously learned more about his
Hold on. We'll block that out. I'm not trying to get on his radar.
Fair enough. So, Marvin Harrison, class act, never did anything wrong.
Correct.
Moving on, Devontae Smith. But yeah, I was actually looking at it. If you take out the Arkansas game, where he only had, I think, like 3 catches for 22 yards, the last 6 games, this dude's got 57 catches, 1,063 yards, and 16 touchdowns. Just in the last 6 games that he's essentially played in. Like, just absurd numbers. Like, I think this is what it took. Like, this is what it takes for a wide receiver to win the Heisman. Like, you can't just have, like, a really good productive season's wide receiver. Like, you have to just put it just ridiculous numbers. Like, I was looking, like you said, he's the first wide receiver since Desmond Howard. Are you aware of the kind of numbers Desmond Howard put up? I don't think I truly gave him props for his Heisman season. 19 receiving touchdowns in 1991 also, but he had 985 yards and 19 receiving touchdowns, but he also had 2 rushing touchdowns, a punt return to the house, a kick return to the house. Like, it's like that's what it takes for like the other positions to win a Heisman. Like Kyle Trask, like if Florida would have won all their games, like he would have won the Heisman, but it wouldn't have been anything like extraordinary that we haven't seen a quarterback do before. Like no disrespect to Kyle Trask, like he was balling, but like we've seen the Colt Brennans, we've seen like Sam Bradford, we've seen Joe Burrow, we've seen quarterbacks put up just huge offensive numbers and maybe not even be like someone like Joe Burrow, where they just like jump off the screen because they kind of make plays with their legs too. It's like you've seen guys like Jason White, just like basic quarterbacks that just are really productive, have a Heisman trophy season. But I think this is what it takes for a wide receiver, and hopefully that, you know, this just breaks the seal, and now we can kind of get back to this not just being a quarterback award, just making it like the most just outstanding player in college football, because that's really what the award should be.
I get where you're coming from. I don't think this is going to be a pivotal moment in the Heisman committee becoming more inclusive of the Kyle Pitts and the Devontae Smiths of the world. I think it's just how this season unfolded. I think if Florida runs away with the SEC East and they don't really they win the SEC title game, like Trask has this locked up. Like literally, if he just beats Bama, he wins this award, and there's no doubt in my mind. I think they'll always have the edge, these top quarterbacks. Like if Trevor Lawrence plays the whole season, they don't lose to Notre Dame in the regular season, does he jump all of them? Like, I think it was just the right kind of things had to fall in place. Everything fell in place for Devontae Smith. And one of them is just really unfortunate, his teammate, Jalen Waddle, being out for the season. Like, if that doesn't happen, he's not on the radar. Like, it's not happening for him. So,
yeah, it's probably a solid 300 or 400 less receiving yards or so. Maybe yeah. 4 or 5 less touchdowns.
I mean, do you remember, like, the whole thing with Waddle to start the season, like, he's just uncoverable. Like, this dude is just, he can stretch the field. He's just an absolute, just incredible receiver, just special. And then Devontae Smith, also special. And I don't know, I think it just, everything fell the right way for him to win, and a receiver to win the Heisman this year. But I still think it, when we look back at, from 2020 to 2030, I'm going to guess the Heisman still end up being 8 of 10 being quarterbacks.
And that's very possible. And I think if Trevor Lawrence had, you know, played Notre Dame, they went undefeated, and, you know, he had like a spectacular game against Notre Dame, which he probably would have, since that's usually what he does. You might have seen that kind of career Heisman given to him, because, you know, just a great 3 years. But yeah, I think with what Devontae Smith did, you could not give it to him. But yeah, it is crazy, because we were literally saying that Jalen Waddle was the best player in Alabama and maybe the best player in the country 3 or 4 weeks into the season. So that's just the embarrassment of riches that Alabama has currently.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. Brian Harsin. And just he came out full heel turn right away from Brian Harsin, steel chair to the back of Shane Beamer this week. Shane Beamer was finalizing his staff. He only had 2 open positions left to fill as of 24 hours ago. And now he needs several more additions to his staff, because Derek Mason is going to be his defensive coordinator in Plains. Mike Bobo has left Shane Beamer as OC to become Harsin's OC. It's also interesting to me that Harsin is bringing his defensive coordinator from Boise, but he's only gonna be like a linebackers coach for Auburn. It's kind of strange there, but yeah, that and then also Wilfie and coming over to coach the offensive line at Auburn. So I don't know what Shane Beamer in this group does, because I think Shane Beamer is the lowest paid current SEC head coach, and you know, the pool for money is different for every school and how much money they have towards assistance. And if you're Tennessee, you have no money because they paused it. what do you make of all of this?
Well, yeah, I think it is kind of interesting that his DC would follow him from Boise but not get the defensive coordinator job. But if you hear that Boise State's defensive coordinator took the linebacker coach job at Auburn, you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. You know, that seems like a normal progression. But yeah, as far as Harsin going out to South Carolina, getting Will Friend and Mike Bobo, that's pretty – I don't know exactly about Will Friend. I think conflicting opinions about him, but Mike is same with Mike Bobo. But I just know when Mike Bobo was the offensive coordinator at Georgia for an extended period of time, Georgia had some of the best offenses they've ever had in school history. So I assume he's going to be the one calling the plays, and I guess he usually runs more of a pro style offense. I don't know if that's what Harsin wants to do, or maybe spread it out. That's kind of that spread,
well, pro style is spread now. Like, that's the thing, is like most quarterbacks are not under center in the NFL anymore. Like, most of the quarterbacks coming in don't play that style, so it's like the pro style is really just like Bama doesn't even do it anymore.
Well, I mean, but yeah, that essentially is the pro style, but yeah. But Auburn was still doing some kind of, you know, spread option kind of.
They were doing a lot of pistol.
Yeah, they had a different kind of thing going on. So if they can just become a normal offense, you know, that just runs the ball well, passes the ball well, you know, and kind of just plays how NFL teams are playing now. And, like, that's what Georgia did with Aaron Murray when Mike Bobo was Aaron Murray and Todd Gurley and that whole crew. Like, they had some great offenses. So Auburn's not going to struggle to get talent. And if Mike Bobo, if you can finally see some quarterbacks actually progress as their careers go on, that's something you just haven't seen under Gus Malzahn. But one note, when you wrote this down in our rundown, you said that Harsin was stealing coaches from USC. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, USC? He's not taking anybody from USC. Mm-hmm. But SC, South Carolina, I was like, no, they're SC. They're not USC. I don't know.
Man, you're really going at Columbia.
They love
Columbia listeners.
USC. It's like, you're not USC. I'm sorry. USC's in Los Angeles. Like, you guys are just SC. You're going to have to deal with that. But,
wow.
But yeah, I thought Derek Mason, I think that's a great hire for a DC. So, yeah, Mike Bobo, you got to get some guys that recruit that area since Harsin has been at Boise State for so long. So I imagine recruiting has a big aspect of these hires.
Another big hire. LSU needed this in a major way. Jake Peets, DJ Mangus comes over from Carolina. They follow Joe Brady to Carolina to be Matt Rule's offensive coordinator this season. But they're going back to Baton Rouge, and Orgeron gets them back. They were both working under, like I said, Brady when Burrow had his career year and LSU won the national title. They're getting the gang back together. Steve Insminger, I think is how you pronounce his last name, has been...
Insminger, I think.
Yeah, well, he's going to a different role. Like, he's not calling plays anymore. He's not the passing game coordinator or anything like that anymore. Obviously, Scott Linehan was let go. Bo Pelini was let go. We don't know who their DC is, correct? They still haven't hired a DC, I don't think.
No, they have yet to hire one.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I know they're interviewing Marcus Freeman from Cincinnati this week, maybe today, which would be a huge hire. Cincinnati's defense has been great. You're familiar with them and what they did against Georgia this past weekend. I think that would be great. But Orgeron knows he has. I think he's feeling the heat, and I think they are in win now mode, and they have to win next year. But good news for Max Johnson to get these guys in there. LSU needed to make severe changes to their staff, and yeah, good for them.
Ed Orgeron's like, I know you guys are mad, but you remember Joe Brady?
Yeah.
Well, these guys know Joe Brady.
It's the new Sean McVay.
Yeah. Who knows? We'll see what happens.
Some good news for your program, your Georgia Bulldogs. JT Daniels is officially back. He announced on his Twitter account, so he will not be entering the draft, and he will be the starting quarterback in Athens this fall. Jordan Davis returning. Does that give you some peace of mind to finally have the quarterback position solidified coming into next season for Georgia?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think those are the biggest two pieces that, like, if Georgia – I mean, JT Daniels, no one seriously thought he was going to go, but it was like, well – you never know with guys these days. He's had some good games. Like, he's eligible. So you didn't know that he was going to leave. Jordan Davis, I think, was the most irreplaceable player on Georgia's entire team this year. Like, you saw when he was out, teams were able to run the ball on Georgia. And when he's in the lineup, teams just – the run is essentially – every team is one-dimensional against Georgia when Jordan Davis is in the lineup. So I think these two guys coming back, I think, could honestly make Georgia the favorite to win the SEC. Like, I know the Alabama's always going to be the favorite for good reason, but thinking about, like, if they lose Mac Jones, they're obviously going to lose a lot more from that team. But it is interesting. We kind of lump Mac Jones in with all those other quarterbacks that are definitely leaving, and you haven't really heard as much about him in terms of mock drafts and NFL boards and things like that. I feel like he's just had such a great season. He'll probably leave, but it's who knows at this point. But yeah, I think these two guys coming back, I think Georgia, it gives Georgia like 15, 16 starters coming back from this year's team. So I think, and including almost the entire offense minus, I think, two offensive linemen. So other than Zamir White, I think that's really the only other player on Georgia who's got the potential to leave if he chooses to stay or go. He's had a decent season. I don't think Georgia fans are really like hanging on that or anything. He's fine. If he comes back, cool. If he leaves, I'm sure Georgia's got enough running backs to replace him. But I think Jordan Davis, this was by far the best news Georgia could have gotten this offseason.
Yeah, I think Georgia's in well position to capitalize on Florida losing everybody, and Georgia.
And if you look at like the top 6-7 teams, like all the teams that are ranked ahead of Georgia, like I think Spencer Rattler, assuming Mac Jones goes, like we just said, I think Spencer Rattler may be the only quarterback returning from, or Spencer Rattler and JT Daniels, like the only quarterbacks returning from the top 8 teams right now. So that could definitely be an advantage for Georgia.
Well, it'll be nice to get some fresh blood in the college football playoff next year. Let me check my notes here. Oklahoma, Bama, Georgia, and probably Ohio State. Really excited to do another.
So who's Ohio State's quarterback going to be next year? I'm sure they'll find somebody.
I think they're going to be okay. I'd have to pull it up. But yeah. The University of Tennessee, my Volunteers, are in trouble. Kind of a damning report. There's an internal investigation going on with UT. They've now paused all their salaries, assistant coach salaries, or raises or something. While the investigation is pending, Chris Lowe mentioned that he cannot see Pruitt surviving this. So because I was one of the people who thought that like it was just very unlikely that they were going to clean house. Now we're at the point where the more I read, the more I listen to different people talk about this, that he will not survive this, and UT will be making a change potentially. I think I'm clearly Tennessee's problems go far deeper than just Jeremy Pruitt and Jerry Garantano, but this is bad. This is worse than what Florida did. This is worse than a lot of other schools are dealing with right now. And I don't know. I think the best case scenario is they can fire with cause and save a lot of money and use that money for a bigger name coach. But man, I don't know. It's very depressing.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's what they're trying to do, right? After giving that extension, they're like, all right, how can we fire this guy and save as much money as possible?
Lack of institutional control. Here we go.
Yeah, right. So I feel for you right now. I know it's been a rough few years for Tennessee fans, and we thought it was getting better, and now it looks like it's just gonna kind of be more of the same.
Yeah, but specifically, folks, here's like kind of what's going on. So they have two vacancies right now because he fired the defensive line coach after 4 games, and Will Friend left the team, and they have not hired their replacements. So if they're pausing that because they had to complete their inquiry first, like a lot of the best names are going to be off the board, and this is a disaster. Like this is really, really bad. There are coaches who have their deals literally expire at the end of the month. That includes Tennessee legend, national champion T. Martin. Brian Niedermeyer is maybe their best recruiter, linebackers coach. Eric Gray was held out of the Texas A&M game because of the inquiry per ESPN. But man, I don't know, man. This is all really bad. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I just think this is going to continue to get worse, it seems like. Ryan Walters in a stunner. He was held on from the Barry Odom staff at Mizzou to be Mizzou's defensive coordinator this year with Eli Drinkwitz, and he's gone. Brett Bielema pulled him from Columbia to Champaign, so he will be Brett Bielema's defensive coordinator. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I thought that was an interesting move, like going from Missouri to Illinois. But
seems like a
I
step
mean,
back, yeah.
It does, but Brett Bielema does have more of a reputation as a head coach than Eli Drinkwitz. So maybe you think kind of hitching your wagon to a guy like Bielema, who's got some NFL experience, got some, you know, big time places like Wisconsin. I guess Arkansas isn't necessarily that big time, but Bielema definitely has – is a bigger name in the coaching circles than Drinkwitz. So that's the best rationale I can come up with, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know what happens here, but Bielema is building a staff, if you will. Last coaching nugget.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. You like that. Don Brown recently let go from Michigan as Jim Harbaugh retools his staff. He is wound up at the University of Arizona to be Jed Fish, new Arizona football coaches and former former New England Patriots quarterback coach Jed Fish join his staff as his DC. So Fish, I think Arizona is maybe the, if it's not the toughest Power 5 job, it's one of them. And we'll see if it all works out. But man, we go back and look at that Rich Rod years. They just, what was Arizona thinking? Like, he, I think, had a winning record at Arizona, which is just preposterous at this point. But yeah, we'll have to see how all this unfolds. But an interesting hire nonetheless.
Yeah, it seems like there was a middle ground, like getting fired at Michigan and becoming the DC somewhere else other than Arizona. It seems like he could have resurfaced somewhere, not the bottom of the Power Five, but there he is.
Yeah, we shall see what happens, but tough gig. Let's do our college football playoff preview, if it happens on the 11th as planned. Nick Saban's daughter doesn't seem to think so. She she chimed in, giving the Buckeyes more bulletin board material, which, who are, like, Dabo, number 11, and then we got Nick Saban's daughter going after the Buckeyes. It's a conspiracy to help Justin Fields heal using COVID. The classic case of using COVID-19 precautions to protect Justin Fields' ribs. That is what you do.
That old story. I'm gonna give you a hot take here.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna guess Nick Saban's daughter never does this once ever again. Like, cause Saban, oh, he's gotta be so pissed. Like,
yeah.
Alabama players never give bulletin board material. Like, they never do stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's cause Saban controls the message, you know, he just runs a tight ship. And mm-hmm. now his daughter's saying something, he's like, I'm gonna have to treat you like one of my players, right? This is how we do things. This is the process. And you can't be running off your mouth on Twitter. Like, we got games to play. Like, you don't need to be a part of the story.
Yeah, she just gets pulled. Like, his married adult daughter, he's just like, nope, pulling your stuff. Like, you've lost your, just grounding his daughter, his adult daughter. I could see it. So the spread is the Tide -8. The over-under is 75 points. The money line is Crimson Tide -290. Buckeyes +245. Bama is 7-1 against the spread in their last 8 games against Big Ten opponents. The last time they didn't, obviously, is when Ohio State won with Ezekiel Elliott that year. Ohio State has a +21.4 point differential. Something has to give. Of those numbers, of those gambling numbers, what entices you the most, Matt Green?
I don't know, man. Those are some difficult numbers right there. The 75 over under.
That's what jumped out to me. I'm like, yeah,
that's,
I'm banging
tough
that one.
For me, because, well, see, I come up with my score prediction first, and my score prediction, I don't know if spoiler alert or anything.
No,
but
we can do
it.
Yeah.
42. I was going 42-35 Alabama. So I was like, oh shoot, that's right there. Like, that, what is that, 77 points?
Yep.
So I'm barely overs, but I guess I'll go over on that one. I feel like whenever we,
Bama's literally averaging 50 a game. They're literally averaging 50 a game. All Ohio State has to do is break 4 touchdowns. All they have to do is score 4 times.
Well, I mean, I would assume Ohio State is going to give them a little bit more of a push on defensively than
do
than
you because like I got that. Some Ohio State defensive numbers for
I
you.
Mean their defense hasn't been great, but Notre
Sean
Dame
Wade going at Devontae Smith, like, I want to cover him and he's not had the best season, like, what are you doing? Like, that was one of those where I'm like, I don't think you want that in your life.
Like,
why would
Cornell Powell just like abused you, man? Like, what do you think Devontae Smith is gonna do?
Oh man. But here's some Ohio State stats for you defensively. They are 60th in passing success rate and they're 50th in passing explosiveness. PFF grades them as the 35th best coverage unit in the country and 71st best tackling team. This all seems bad when you're playing Alabama.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, good pass defense. I think Georgia was probably pretty highly ranked in terms of pass defense, especially when they played Alabama earlier in the year, and they got absolutely abused. So a team that's actually been passed on by been thrown on by teams like Indiana. Like, I don't know how Ohio State is going to get stops, but my thought on this game is I just have this feeling like Justin Fields is going to channel like his Deshaun Watson. Like, I just feel like we're going to walk away from this game thinking like, wow, Justin Fields is actually the best player in college football. Like I think Justin Fields is going to put the team on his back. And like, that's why this game is going to be as
after
close.
After doubting him against Clemson, you're all in.
It's not that I was doubting him against Clemson. It was just Clemson has just been dominant, you know? So I was probably more focused on Clemson's offense versus Ohio State's defense and, you know, maybe selling Fields a little short. But yeah, I mean, after that performance he had against Clemson, like Alabama's defense has been better than Clemson's this year, but this isn't necessarily the most flawless Alabama defense we've seen. You know, like they're still good at defending the run. So I don't see Trey Sermon going off like he has the last couple games against Alabama. But I just think Justin Fields is going to like will this team to just to this being a four quarter game. Like I think he's just going to be that good in this game that he's going to keep it close. But ultimately, like we've said, I just don't see how they stop Najee Harris, how they stop Devontae Smith. And just, yeah, like I think Alabama's offense is going to be too much, but Justin Fields is going to put on a show.
Interesting. I've been going back and forth all week about what I think ends up happening here. I don't think it's going to be Justin Fields' fault.
Hey. Yeah, and trust me, as a Georgia fan, I am rooting against Justin Fields. I do not want to see him raising that trophy while we're sitting at home. But I just, dude's a baller.
He's incredible. He's damn near perfect last week. I still just, I can't do it. Bama's just too good. Bama just feels like a complete team. Dylan Moses leading the team in tackles. Like him being back this year has been a godsend for them. Patrick Surtain, I'm interested to see how he matches up with Chris Olave. I just think Bama's more complete. I thought Clemson had problems. I didn't think they were as complete as they could be. And also the Clemson, like the whole like scheduling stuff, like Clemson had a month off. Clemson played like one game in a month. I hated that fallout of like, well, Ohio State played half the games. I'm like, Clemson was rested. They had a month.
Yeah, they look well rested, don't they? It's like Clemson was well rested too.
Yeah, like let's pump the brakes there, and that being the reason as to why Clemson lost that football game. I don't know. I'm not betting against Bama this year. They are this might be like the most dominant Bama team in our lifetime, right? Like that is a distinct possibility, especially if Jalen Waddle never got hurt and if he plays in this game and just gives them kick return, punt return stuff. Like they have too many options, and this is the best offensive line they've ever had. And I don't think Ohio State's going to get home. I think Sean Wade is going to have a rough day, and I think Bama is just going to put up too many points even for Justin Fields to overcome. So give me Bama. Let's go Bama 49. Let's go Bama 52, Ohio State 35.
Okay. So you think they're cruising in this one?
I really do.
Or do you think it's a game that they like into the third, into the fourth quarter, but they just kind of break it open? Or you think it's like,
I think it's going to be close at the end of the first half. It's like 17-9 or something. And we're like, oh, they just a couple things could have gone their way. Just a couple. The Ohio State kicked some field goals, so they needed to put the ball in the end zone. And then the second half is just when Ohio State's pass defense just really falls apart is going to be my guess.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah. I think it's crazy to say with how dominant Alabama has been to this point. I kind of think the 2015 team was like their best team with Jacob Coker as the starter, even though he wasn't like their best quarterback or anything. But that was that team that scored just a ridiculous number of defensive touchdowns. Like it was like they would have won like six games without scoring an offensive touchdown. That team was dominant, and that was Derrick Henry's 2,000-yard season. But this Alabama team, it just seems so much easier. It just seems like everything they do, you're like, wow, another 70-yard touchdown. You're like, you walk into the other room for a second. You're like, oh, yeah, Alabama scored a touchdown, by the way. It's just, this team's just absurd.
Yeah. Well, we have to wrap up here, Matt Green. Thank you, as always, sir. We'll be back next week on the podcast. So we'll probably wait until after the national title game to record our next pod, just so we can
recap
that. And then some more coaching news, I'm going to guess, pops up there. For that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got. Good sir, we will talk again very soon.
Sounds good, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.